Say, kids, what time is it?
It is time
for the Rish Outcast. That's right. And I'm Rish Outfield. I am your host. I like to think of myself as your friend. And we are back to present the rest of Creepy Doll, or Todd, Jenny, and the Ugly Doll, or
What's Up, Dollface?
Or
Dolls Fair in Love and War.
I think I can come up with a better title. The question is, should I try? When last we left, I had had the recorder shut off on me after I had recorded a lot. And so in anger, I said, okay, that's it. This is going to be split into two, which is a little bit petty, but which is a little bit necessary too. This is probably the shortest story I've ever split in two. Sorry? You understand, don't you? Without further ado, here's the rest.
They left baggage claim, walking together to short-term parking. Todd with his suitcase, Jenny with the doll.
Are you still at the dentist's office?
He asked her. She had been a receptionist in a dental clinic when they first started to date? But she didn't tell him stories, neither the funny ones nor the awful kind, anymore.
No, actually. Dr. Plowman moved to Utah last week. We were together 4 years and...
She snorted and corrected herself.
Together. I worked for him for 4 years. He asked if I'd like to go with him, but...
She made a shuddering gesture. Not a fan of Utah, he asked. Todd had never been.
Oh, the state's okay. And I like the jazz better than the Nuggets, but no. There was something implicit in his invitation. Wasn't a fan of that.
Ah, he said. Then added, I'm sorry. In the way that you do when someone mentions a hardship their race, gender, or religion entails that you don't quite understand.
It's fine. I had a job interview yesterday. My sister's boyfriend works at the county jail, said they need someone on the front desk.
Jail? He repeated, and they talked about it until they found her car. A big brown Chrysler Fifth Avenue from the 80s. Something a gangster would drive in a mafia movie. She had a keychain with the lightning bolt from The Flash on it, hanging from the rear view. The car had been her grandfather's, she explained, and instead of selling it, her mother had offered it to Jenny. What kind of gas mileage does it... he began, but she cut him off with, even worse than you're guessing. He set the doll on the enormous back seat, face down.
You thirsty? She asked,
starting the engine with a sound that reminded him of taxicabs and Brooklyn accents. He nodded, happy to hit a bar if it would put this little visit at ease. She had talked to him about getting a room in Denver, but told him not to make the reservation, just in case. He had pored over the meaning of those three words about 100 times since then. Just in case could mean something very good or something bad, in a way that most phrases couldn't.
I passed one of those gourmet soda places driving up here. Want to try it?
He didn't care one way or another, but agreed. It was about 1.5 miles away from the airport, and as she asked him about his flight, he peeked at the back seat again. The doll was sitting back there like an obedient little girl, albeit without a seatbelt. He wondered if, when this big car was new, you had to pay extra for seatbelts. The car had automatic windows, and she lowered hers part way, letting in some crisp mountain air. He tried to do the same, but discovered the passenger side window was broken, forever stuck in the up position. She apologized, but it was no big deal. Right before they reached the freeway was a little strip mall that included a place called Soda Vine. Its logo was of an old-timey glass bottle with a straw in it, and a halo over the straw. Jenny pulled the gigantic car into a parking spot and looked over.
You okay with this?
He pasted a more pleasant expression on his face. With what?
Soda, she said. Or do you call it pop where you come from? I'll meet you halfway.
How about soda pop? He quipped. He didn't ever call it that, but he was trying to seem clever. Probably failing, he was all too aware. He didn't feel nervous exchanging emails or FaceTiming with her. Why was he all weird now? Maybe it was the doll. Maybe it had thrown off his game by its mere presence. Jenny was talking.
You're not one of those people that claim diet soda tastes as good as regular soda, are you?
What? No, Todd said in an unconscious Mark Wahlberg impression. I think it tastes better. She looked horrified.
I think I'll take you back to the airport.
Then she smiled a little more naturally. I can't imagine there are really people that feel that way, he said.
Oh, there are, Jenny intoned. But they're only allowed visitors during non-straitjacket hours.
She got out of the car. In the moment before Todd did as well, he glanced at the veiled doll in the back seat.
Kana klifili du,
the doll said. Todd recoiled. Obviously, it was a recorded doll voice, but it had never spoken before. What did you say? He actually asked it. Of course, it didn't answer. He deliberately turned away from it and got out of the car. Jenny raised her brows at him.
Has that doll spoken to you?
He asked.
Do you mean literally speaking, or do you mean I like something about
literally it? Speaking?
No. How do you make it talk?
I don't know. It just did, on its own. She squinted at him, then back at the car.
What did it say?
He shook his head in an it's not important gesture. They neared the So Divine building. So is this a restaurant? Todd asked. Do they serve food?
You're kidding, right? You've never been to a soda bar?
Sorry, what am I missing? Her face scrunched up a bit.
Well,
they went inside. So Divine was like a malt shop, only without the malt. All they served was fountain drinks, although they also had souvenirs. He drank something called a Dirty Dr. Pepper, and was tempted to make a joke about their family doctor being Dirty Dr. Pepperidge until he got arrested. But he didn't quite dare. Some jokes weren't safe for a first date, if that was what this was. They mostly talked, and he realized it was probably some kind of family-friendly alternative to a regular bar, intended for teenagers to gather and get to know each other without the specter of alcohol to worry about, although the prices weren't that far from a real bar. Jenny was lively and fun, with cute observations about people and life in general, and for at least a minute or so, he let his guard down and just acted like himself. Maybe this would work out fine, maybe it wouldn't, but she was worth trying to make it work with, and he thought he could develop feelings for her with practically no effort. He wondered if she felt the same, and recalled reading in a pop psychology book that women make up their minds about potential love interest within 5 minutes of meeting someone. Or had that been something Brad at work had told him? Brad, who also believed that the government had bases on the moon, that fluoride toothpaste caused autism, and that Tupac was alive and part of the Illuminati. Or worse, maybe that little factoid had been a joke some comedian had told on HBO. They chatted and chuckled over their overpriced fountain drinks for a few minutes more, then went out into the afternoon sun again, and his mood was just as bright. But then Todd slowed. The doll was sitting on his seat, not in the back of the Chrysler. He hadn't moved it, and Jenny had been with him the whole time, right? He opened the door as Jenny went around, wondering if he should point it out to her.
Kluvo Kluvo Chan Aig,
said the doll. He hadn't touched it. Unless the vibration of the door set it off, there weren't many other explanations. Did you hear that? He said when Jenny sat down in the driver's side.
No, say it again.
Of course she hadn't heard it. The veiled thing was, if not malevolent, out to shatter his date with this woman. Hey, maybe I could toss the doll now, he suggested. He'd seen a garbage can right outside the entrance.
I feel a little bad about it, Jenny said. But you did what you could.
Yeah, he said, and reached for it.
Bangunin!
The doll exclaimed. Todd recoiled.
Okay, I definitely heard that, Jenny said, dropping the keys in her lap.
Oh, thank God, said Todd under his breath.
What was that it said?
Sounds like another language. He reached for it again.
Chimagwalgot, Todd,
the doll said. He froze, the doll in his hand. Had it just...
You heard that too, right?
He managed.
Yeah, weird language. Maybe something African?
What, like Swahili? No, I think it said Todd.
What?
Negla iominan, Todd la renso,
the doll said.
Holy shit. That was definitely Todd Lorenzo, Jenny said. Is this a prank? Are there cameras around?
No, Todd insisted, though that was not a bad explanation for all this. Unless the prank is on me.
Have you looked it over? Jenny asked. Checked for speakers?
No, he admitted. It was a strange idea, but not as strange as a deformed doll that spoke his name in Zulu or something. Jenny reached over and picked up the doll to examine it.
Well, it's light, she said. But that doesn't mean anything in this day and age.
She lifted its veil and winced.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Todd said.
I can't explain that face. I can. It was designed by Picasso.
Todd, not an art student, didn't get the reference, but he inwardly sighed with relief when she replaced the veil.
You know what this might be?
Jenny said.
Maybe an adult made it for Halloween. Something deliberately creepy.
Like that Annabeth one from the movies.
Yeah, a scary prop for a show.
Or a music video, he said.
Or to have sex with,
Jenny threw in. And Todd had absolutely no response to that. You'd have to be pretty damn lonely to even consider that. Jenny seemed to have a similar idea, for she turned the doll upside down and started to peel back its long dress.
Elovo magatrimini puo, Jenny Meekles,
the doll said. Jenny actually shrieked and threw the doll on the back seat. Todd, too, shrank away.
What? What, did it move? Huh? No, Jenny exclaimed. But it said my name.
He looked from the doll to his date.
It said mine, too. Why was this so much scarier? Because I hardly know you, Jenny said. I've known me my whole life.
It might have been a funny statement under other circumstances. But then the doll said,
Skag gurk tatoga nu.
And there was something so threatening about it that the young woman actually opened the car door and abandoned the vehicle. The terror was infectious, and Todd did the same. Jenny ran around the car and grabbed Todd with both arms. A kind of intimate gesture, but understandable in these circumstances.
Okay, it's talking to us, and whatever it's saying is... evil,
Todd finished.
Well, yeah, scary at least.
Todd laughed. He couldn't help it.
I'm glad it's not just me. I'm relieved to hear you say it.
Jenny glanced back at her car. The doll was standing up on the back seat, the veiled head staring out at them. They had not set it up that way.
Shoot, Jenny said. I'd planned on driving that car another 3 years, but I'm seriously considering just walking away from it.
Todd tried to think of a solution.
No, we're going to get it out of the car, then we can just drive away.
Jenny looked back for the briefest of seconds, then shuddered.
If you can get it out of my grandpa's car, I'll probably sleep with you. I'm just saying.
Todd didn't have time to ponder that statement.
Trouble is, what will it do if I try to get rid of it?
Jenny didn't answer. She must be wondering the same thing. Todd wished he hadn't remembered his book on the plane and gone back for it, discovering the doll. Or why couldn't he have just left it where it was, not tried to be such a good Sumerian or whatever that saying was? He took in his surroundings. There was a road, a gas station, a bunch of outlet stores, and a golf course taking up at least an acre nearby. Back at the car, the doll was no longer in the window.
"Dale," he said, pointing. "Doll's gone," Jenny said, as though commenting on something a lot more mundane.
They were on the passenger side of the big car, so they couldn't see exactly how, but the driver's door opened, then closed again. Todd shook his head. This was no longer a sick prank show they were in the middle of. This was a horror film. The doll's voice came loud and clear from the other side of the Chrysler.
"Cloma pichunado, clat for Todd, Jenny."
Todd tried to imitate Jenny's detached calm.
"Guess it walks, too,"
he said softly.
"Ugh, unless it's one of those dolls that crawls. That would be worse."
He agreed. He glanced down. She had taken his hand. Their eyes met. Yeah, she was pretty attractive in person. He wished this were happening under any other conditions. He looked back to the car. They both did. The doll was standing in front of the Chrysler now, still as a child's plaything, actually.
"You know, I've never seen it move,"
Todd observed through the side of his mouth.
"But it does." "It's like freeze tag," Jenny suggested.
He scoured his mind for the rules to that game.
"So, should we, like, back away as fast as we can?" "Not a bad idea,"
Jenny said, and led him through the parking lot, hoping they didn't trip over something and go sprawling, giving the creepy doll the opportunity to pounce.
"It could be being controlled remotely,"
Todd guessed.
"Or it could be alive,"
Jenny guessed, just as logically.
"Maybe you angered somebody, like a gypsy lady."
The doll in question hadn't moved yet from where it stood. Todd kept slowly backing up.
"Gypsy lady? That's how it works in old movies. And how do they get rid of the doll in those movies?"
Todd wanted to hear.
"I don't know. Burn it? Those movies are usually pretty bad." "Yeah,"
Todd said. A hefty lady came out of the nail salon next to the soda place, already lighting her cigarette. She paused at the sight of two adults walking backwards through the parking lot.
"The hell?"
she asked in a surprisingly high-pitched voice. Todd glanced at her, and Jenny must have too, because suddenly the doll was toddling toward them. Stealth be damned.
"Run?"
Todd asked.
"Run,"
Jenny said, and took off in the direction of the golf course. Todd followed. The property was surrounded by a chain-link fence. Without discussing it, Todd used his joined palms to boost her up. She climbed over, and he quickly came after her. They ran, passing a sign announcing the 9th hole, par 3. He considered asking her if she ever played golf, but now was not the time. The doll was never far behind. Once it was waddling near the 7th hole sand trap. Once it was peeking around the tree on the 5th. A couple of elderly players in horrible golf shirts yelled at them to get off the course, but the doll didn't appear to be concerned with them. One of the men had called them "you kids," and Todd wanted to laugh about that, but it would have to wait. Besides, the doll was now somehow waiting for them on the fourth green cart trail, as impossible as that should have been. "Can it fly?" he wondered aloud.
"At this point, that wouldn't surprise me," Jenny said.
He stopped in his tracks, grabbing Jenny's arm.
"It's in front of us." "So?"
"Let's go back."
"Back to the sixth hole?"
"Back to your car."
"But the doll can fly," she said,
but still ran with him, their hands entwined. They were a gasping, sweaty mess when they reached the fence again, but they seemed to have outrun the doll. Jenny helped Todd over the fence this time, saying it was only fair. He paused with his foot in her hands.
"But what if it gets you as I'm going over?" "We'll climb together then," she said, shaking her head. "And I was nervous you wouldn't show up."
He stared at her as they went over the fence.
"But I said I'd be there. I gave you the flight number." "Yeah, but my sister thought we were crazy for doing this, that you wouldn't come in the end."
He jumped down first and reached to help her down.
"Let's prove your sister wrong," he said,
and gave her a tentative kiss. She kissed him back, not quite so tentatively. They started for the car. He peeked behind them and saw the veiled doll at the base of the fence, about to start climbing. It had to be just playing with them now.
"Kasluth Chima, Todd Ni Jenny,"
he heard it say.
"What does it want?"
he asked Jenny, as though she could somehow know the answer.
"Either to kill us," she suggested, "or just to play."
He missed a step.
"What?" "Based on the movies I've seen,"
she added, rather unnecessarily. Nearing exhaustion, he considered just stopping and waiting for it to find out what kind of play it had in mind. Tag, tea time, strip poker, go fish, cards against humanity. But that distorted face beneath the veil convinced him to keep running. They reached the parking lot of the too expensive soda bar and wound their way through the cars till they saw Jenny's big Fifth Avenue right in their path. Someone was waiting for them there. It wasn't the doll, but a little girl, one that was hunched over in an unnatural way, wearing a hoodie, Oshkosh overalls, and a poorly spelled Justine Bieber concert t-shirt. There was definitely something wrong with the child, because she too was wearing a black veil. She held up her palms in a "do not be afraid" signal. She had six fingers on each hand. Breathing heavily, Jenny was the first to say something.
Hello.
"Hello,"
the girl said back, but the voice was wrong, as though she too were speaking through a mechanical voice box, if that's even how the doll was communicating its unsettling gibberish. She turned her covered face toward Todd.
"Thanking for finding baby."
"What's that?"
he asked. But then the doll was there, waddling toward the girl like a one-year-old. She knelt down and embraced it. They embraced each other, and the girl lifted her veil long enough to kiss the doll on its head. The little girl also had eyes in the wrong place, two mouths and gills. Then she replaced her covering and stood up, the doll in hand. It was whispering to her in that strange tongue, but both Todd and Jenny's names were part of what it said.
"Baby not speaking English,"
the deformed girl said.
"So you not understanding."
"We're sorry,"
Jenny said. Todd just stood there.
"I'm leaving on aeroplane,"
said the girl. Her legs and arms bent the wrong way.
"I have much fear."
"We understand," Jenny said. "I had a petal princess once."
"Thanking again,"
said the girl, and damned if there wasn't emotion there. Human-like emotion. Todd swallowed.
Tell her you're welcome, Denim,
Jenny said.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
We being secret.
The veiled girl eyed them both.
You not speaking of me and baby, no?
Oh, no, Todd mumbled. Not at all, Jenny said.
The girl, if that was what she was, nodded and started walking away from the Chrysler.
Good spy.
A green Nissan Juke pulled up. All of its windows so tinted nothing inside could be seen. The back door opened, and the girl and doll got in. The Juke drove away, leaving Jenny and Todd in the parking lot, half unsettled and half confused.
I, find you really attractive,
Todd said, apropos of nothing. Or maybe everything.
Let's go get a drink,
Jenny said.
Not the soda kind.
All right,
he said. And they both got into her car and drove away. The end.
And there you have it. That's the story. And before I was talking a little bit about ambition, about writing this the same month that I came up with an idea for it, putting out an episode, well, recording an episode the same month that I wrote it, just because of ambition. Ambition is a funny thing, kids. I sometimes have it. I wish I had it all the time. You know, that this story came about because of Gino Moretto. Because of his ambition, because of him sending an image to me for an audio collection, which didn't exist. But I thought it would be neat if it did. And so, here we are. Gino's son's name is Lorenzo, and he's mentioned him to me a few times. And so I gave the main character, Todd, the last name of Lorenzo, just as a nod to Gino. Gino has done 3 covers for me now for these audio collections. And the thing is, when I came up with the idea to do them, to put them out there, it was because I had ambition and because over the years I had amassed a lot of short stories that I had recorded. And last I looked, I had more than enough for 3 volumes. I had enough for 4 volumes. But let's say that I were a successful writer and I died. My publisher would have enough for 6 or 7 of these things, easily. Big Anklevich one time said that I could put out 1 of these collections of short stories a year, and it would be 10 years before I ever had to record anything new. I just had that much stuff set aside. But, you know, there are things that I've recorded where I always feel like I'm not going to put that in a collection. And sometimes things have sound effects in them or music. Christmas stories. I've put out a bunch of Christmas stories, and I've never included any of them in my collections. Because, again, if I had ambition, if Gino sent me a scary Christmas cover, I could put out a collection of just Christmas stories. But it would probably be smarter to just sprinkle them in here. 1 in this collection, 1 in the next collection, 2, you know, in the future. I don't know. We'll see. Big talks often about the potential for putting out collections and putting out sets. And he said, you can put out each new Ben Park story as its own little book, you know, $1.99 thing, and its own little audiobook, you know, like $6.99 thing. But you can do a collection. It's like now you have 3 Ben Park stories, so put out a collection of 3. And when you finish and you have 7 or something like that, you can have like the complete Sidekick Chronicles, and you can put that out. But it doesn't mean that the shorter collections, the shorter versions, the individual releases aren't still available. Sometimes he'll talk about these things and it gets me all fired up. And big is a really good, like Mickey from Rocky, you know, a coach, a trainer, somebody who encourages. But I don't know if Burgess Meredith's character, Mickey, had been a boxer. Because, yeah, Big just doesn't put his stuff out even more than I don't put my stuff out. But, yeah, if I found a little bit more ambition, I could put one of these collections out. Yes, the next one should be Creepy Doll and Other Stories. But then I could put one up after that. I could put one up after that. If Gino wanted to send me that stuff, then maybe I would be like, all right, now I have to do it. Kind of like this. Let's see. I talked about the title. I talked about the circumstance of writing this. We have all seen, unless you absolutely avoid horror films, we have seen a movie about a scary doll. There's the scary doll in Poltergeist, which is a clown doll. It was woohoo! Two birds, one stone. There was the infamous Zuni fetish doll from Trilogy of Terror. There was the doll from the Twilight Zone. Gosh, what was her name?
My name is Talking Tina, and I'm going to kill you.
There is Annabelle. There was one called The Boy that came out recently where there was like an old couple that had a doll, a realistic, super creepy doll that they treated like their son, and they hired a woman to, I don't know, change him? What did they hire the woman for? Clearly he's not just a doll if you're going to hire a woman. Although I think the premise was, well, these guys are crazy, right? What a cushy job. And then probably most famously there is the Child's Play series. And I'm leaving out hundreds of examples. Gosh, when I was a kid, we went to the video store, and I want to say Stuart Gordon either produced or directed a movie called Dolls. And they had a poster of it on the wall. It was a little girl doll, and I want to say that her features were skull-like, but she had two, like, human eyes in her eye sockets. And on the poster, it said, Mama, Dada, die, die. And I loved that. I thought it was the funniest thing. I didn't see the movie Dolls until like 15, 20 years later. It wasn't a great movie. It wasn't even a good movie, really. But that was just adorable, that poster. And it stayed with me all these years. Anyhow, the problem with the doll movies is it's really, really hard to make a doll scary. It is. It's just the fact that they are small, the fact that they are usually made of plastic or porcelain. You know, porcelain is even worse. The fact that they are usually puppets or animatronics. I know that Chucky in the most recent couple of Child's Play sequels, they don't even call them Child's Play anymore. Call them like something of Chucky, Curse of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, Cult of Chucky, Masseuse of Chucky, Marriage Counselor of Chucky. They are just not scary. They're usually funny. I don't know how you can make something like Chucky scary. Part of it is you have to be really careful of how you show it. But another part is that dolls, living dolls, tend to be funny rather than scary, whether you intend it to or not. I mean, just the problem with Chucky, besides his dollness, besides his puppetness, is that he's foul-mouthed and he's voiced by Grima Wormtongue. What's his name? Brad Dourif? Is that his name? Brad Dourif? And that's inherently funny. To hear a little boy doll in an adult's voice say, I'll get you, you little bitch. It's comedic whether they intended it to or not. And so if you are a filmmaker and you have made a scary movie about a doll, and it's legitimately scary, then you have talent. You know, like Spielberg with Poltergeist, or... I know Richard Matheson wrote the story that the Zuni fetish doll was made from.
Anyhow, it's much easier to go for comedy. And I made a choice fairly early on in this story that I was going to go for comedy instead of horror. Instead of trying to be scary, I would try to be funny. And I think the first scene that I wrote where I made that shift was when he tries to give the doll to the baggage claim person. Because it just seemed funny, the idea of him saying, hey, somebody left this on the plane, and the airline won't take it. Now, maybe that's absurd. I have a friend named Mick, and he works for the airlines, and he probably would have a bunch of problems with this story. But holy cow, Mick, the first draft of this story, she met him at the gate when he deplaned. Jenny did. She said, oh, is that for me? I know that I look young, but... And he's like, no. Some kid left it on the plane. And I kept that line, but it's not as natural as it was. I had forgotten that you can't just meet somebody at the gate anymore. It used to be, when you got off a plane, there was a family waiting. You know, welcome home, Captain Kevorkian. Welcome home, Captain Spaulding. Welcome home, Captain Kangaroo. Welcome home, Uncle Rish. But it had been so long since I flew, I had forgotten that, you know, they don't even let you into the airport where you could be around. There I said around again. Around a plane, unless you have a boarding pass, unless you have a ticket, unless you have a greetings. No, I don't think even then. They're really careful about that, and it's understandable why they are. It just necessitated that I have her call him as soon as he got off the plane rather than be there and they could have their adventure start immediately. Anyhow, the idea that somebody that works for the airline would not accept something from a passenger is understandable. But I think if it were a doll, they wouldn't have that much of a problem with it. But I just figured Todd is a little bit twitchy. Todd is a little bit backward. Todd is a little bit like me, except for the fact that he could probably hold down a job. And so he says the wrong thing, or he's about to say, hey, it's not like it has a bomb in it. And Jenny stops him. To me, that's kind of funny. You know, I'm just going to go in the bathroom and leave the doll there. And when I come out, we can start our date together. We can get to know each other. And she's like, no, I don't know that you should go in there and leave the doll. Anyhow, I decided that tonally I wanted this to be more of a funny story than a scary one. And it could be that writing a legitimately scary story about a doll is beyond me. And so I took the easy way out. Oh well, I hope you like the story anyway. Usually I leave the stories, as I said last episode, for a while, so that when I pick them up, they're more fresh. But this is an exception. It's no big deal. It's just one that I decided to rush out because I couldn't bear to sit and try and do all of A Mark on the Sky in one night. Just formatting that bad boy has been so difficult. I don't know why it has to, but it does. Usually while I'm writing, I just put the, you know, three asterisks to mean that it's a scene break. And I never do chapters. I never just write chapter one and then I go on until it's like, okay, that's the end of that. Chapter two, I never do that. And it's because I'm a short story writer at heart and I'm never sat down to write a novel. Well, that's not true. With the Mennonite Monster Hunter story, I think it was called Jeremiah's Blues, I sat down with the intention of writing a novel. And how far did I get into it? Like 4,000 words, 3,000 words before I tucked my tail and fled. But every other time, I've just been writing a short story, and it's like, ooh, this one is going to be a really long. short story. And so for Mark on the Sky, which is 20-something thousand words long, it's not novel size, but it's not short, I thought it would serve the story better to put chapters in. And so I just went through and replaced each of the, they're not ellipses, but you know what I'm talking about, where I've got the three asterisks, the three stars. I replaced those with, you know, one, two, three. But it messed up the formatting, and I discovered that there were some chapters that are like 2 pages long, and there are other chapters that are like 7 pages long or longer. It's just like, oh gosh, why did I do this? But I didn't want to have some, I should have just been like, okay, well, when one of these sections is really small, then I'll combine two. I've done that before. I just, on this one, I thought, no, I don't want to go back. I'm just going to have some short chapters. But yeah, just the formatting alone takes so much time. And as I said in the last episode, I hope that A Mark on the Sky gets out there soon. It's just, yeah, I would have to really focus and say, you know what? I have these things that I'd like to do, but I'm not going to do them because I am going to focus on this, on putting this out there, on finishing this, on editing this. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those are good ideas. That's why you heard this episode right now. It's because I just didn't have the stones to do that novella. I wanted to do something, though. And so here it is. I think I'm still going to put out that short story collection that Gino made me the cover for, Creepy Doll and Other Stories, just because. It doesn't really take any extra time to have two versions, one where it's called Creepy Doll and one where it's called Todd and Janet and Dr. Kevorkian and the Minnesota Twins. What is it called? I think Todd, Jenny, and the Ugly Doll is what I called it. But I'm not thrilled with that title, so who knows what it ends up being called. Guys, thank you for listening to the Rish Outcast. I've made it back to my car. I went around the lake. I did sit down on a rock a couple of times. I hope the wind wasn't too bad. I suspect that there were times that it was. And for that, I apologize. Anyhow, my life would be very different if I hadn't discovered podcasting. You know, I don't know that I give Big Anklevich enough credit for that. I certainly would have done it without Big, but I would have done it differently. I would have done it later. And it was his push that we can be podcasters, that this would be fun for us to do together, that got me here. So thanks to Big, and thanks to you for listening. Thanks to you especially if you have supported me in my endeavors creatively. As always, there is the Patreon where you can support me. And you know, if you don't have a lot of money, you could support me for a couple of episodes and then violently withdraw your support. That has happened. One thing that's neat, though, is I get an email every time somebody signs on to support me, but I have to go looking to see if someone has stopped supporting me. And so you could get on there and support me for a show. And it wouldn't be until a long time down the road when I see the numbers have changed that I realize that you had abandoned me. And so there's an idea. Here's another idea. I don't use iTunes. I think iTunes is the enemy of all that is good and holy. But I've been told that my show is on iTunes. In fact, there was that time that I went on there before I ever had a way of supporting financially the Rish Outcast. And somebody had written a review where they said it was not worth the money. And I thought, F you. I mean, I did feel that, but heck, maybe that review fueled my decision to finally get on the horse and do a Patreon so that there was a way to waste money on the Rish Outcast. So in that way,
I'm very... Nope, not grateful. But you could leave a review on iTunes if you like. I'll probably never see it. But think of how well you will sleep that night knowing that you reviewed my show. The other way you can support me is, of course, by sending me an email, sending me something over on Facebook. I'm Rish Outfield over there on Facebook. By listening to my sister podcast, well, Kissing Cousin, really. Delusions of Grandeur over on the Journey Into podcast. Or leaving a comment right here. I like that stuff. I like knowing that there are people that care, that liked, that lived and died within these storied halls. I will be back soon with another rambling, overlong Rish Outcast. Hope you are there too. Good night.
The music in this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod, the podcaster's friend. His work can be found over at incompetech.com.
Hey, this is the creepy doll. Yeah, I'm scary, ain't I? The Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives 3.0 license. You know what that means? That means that you, whether you're a person or a creepy doll like me, can listen to it, can share it, can download it. You can delete that sucker, free of charge. But you can't claim credit for it, and you can't sell it. I don't know why you would. I mean, I'm a creepy doll, and even I can't think of a scenario in which you would. But that's what it is. Thank you. Good night.
Wow. That was effed up.
Gosh, my allergies are really bothering me. I don't know if I've been having allergies the whole time I've been recording. I hope not, because it would make for, what's the opposite of good podcasting? Oh, yes. The Rish Outcast. You know, they don't even let you into the airport unless you have a boarding pass, unless you have a ticket, unless you have breasts. Ambition is a funny thing, kids. And I just inhaled a... a gnat or three.